Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. This is really for your benefit today, not that the other ones aren't, but we're going to talk about a practical guide to Roth IRA conversions, both IRA, traditional IRAs, to Roth IRAs, as well as the second half of the show will focus in on the voluntary contribution to the Roth. And to lead us in that discussion is Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, travels the country now doing retirement seminars, weekly GovExec columnist, and always answers the questions I never know. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob.
All righty, so we're going to start out. My name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance type with NITP as well. And if you would, if you haven't already, you should print out, there's a PDF file on our website. Our website is pretty simple, NITPINC.com. NITPINC.com.
Some people call it nitpink.
Yeah.
Great not name. Not nitpicky.
Well, we're nitpicky, but not too nitpicky. Anyway, you should have that as we go along. I'm going to start out, and I'm just going to introduce the thought process of what we're going to do. So if you don't have this, you really should print it out. Otherwise, you're not going to follow us because we're going to go through this somewhat page by page. We won't read from it, but we'll cite page 1 or page 8 or page 16 or whatever. Okay, but this is what I'd like to do, and Tammy, take me off on any reasonable tangent. Hopefully I can take her off on some reasonable tangents when we get into the VC and the like. But we'll talk first about the history of IRAs, just so we lay the groundwork. I think we all know that there are two types, but we'll talk about the traditional IRA very quickly, when it was introduced, why it was so popular, why it then became less popular, and then the introduction of the Roth IRA that initially seemed too good to be true, and it was for those that made more than a certain amount, but then those barriers, while still there, there was an opportunity to get money into a Roth IRA, maybe not directly, but certainly indirectly. And then we'll talk about how to contribute directly to either type. So the first is pretty easy. The second...
I wanted to just interrupt you for 1 minute.
Yeah.
Whenever we're talking about IRAs and we're talking to mainly federal employees, I think, is our audience, maybe it might be good to start with a little background about how IRAs are different from the TSP or what role they might play in your retirement planning.
Okay.
I get questions at the seminar about, you know, should I do the TSP? Should I do an IRA? What's the difference? What is an IRA?
That's a good point because I forgot a lot of questions I get in class, and it's the same question. Can I put money into my IRA and my TSP? So, yeah, we'll go off on that tangent. All righty, and then we're going to have graphics in here that you need to follow, because if you do this verbally, I think I would lose everyone and myself. So if you just follow along.
I think you're a closet teacher, Bob. You want to be a... this is the Bob Lyons class of IRAs today. So get your workbooks out and get ready to take notes.
And your colored pens and pencils. And then we'll talk about how to transfer those into a Roth, and then we'll really get into the VC. And Tammy's written 3 outstanding articles on the VC, and we're going to talk about that. Actually, it's in here, but I'd urge you to read it on the website rather than on paper. And then at the end, you know, why are we doing this? You know, the first question is, just because it's tax-free potentially doesn't make it good. The old adage is, if it's tax-deductible, it must be good. Well, that's not true and ought to have some economic substance behind it, and maybe even some moderate estate planning and family planning. And if we have time, we'll open up the show to telephone calls, but historically that's not been the case with this subject. But I won't be negative. I'll remain positive. Okay, so that's just a rough idea of what was on the first page for those of you that are maybe just printing it out. But we're on page 2 now. The page numbers are at the bottom right. Every page is at the bottom right. This is different than if you went to one of our retirement seminars where the pages are not always at the bottom right. Anyway, the first page talks about traditional IRAs. And some people don't realize how long they've been around. They were initially allowed in 1975. And it was almost too good to be true at that point, but you were entitled to put $1,500 into a savings account, affectionately called an IRA, But unlike most savings accounts, where if you save money, you just pay taxes on it and then you saved your money. In this case, you put the money in and then you got a tax deduction for saving money. And on top of that, there was no taxes on the earnings until either you pulled it out or they made you pull it out at 70 and a half. So way back then, when it was first introduced, I looked at it and I said, did they make a mistake here? $1,500 then isn't too much different than $6,000, $5,000 now. It's hard to just pull $5,000 or $6,000 out now, as hard as it was to do $1,500. So people stretch, though. I mean, they save. They saved $125 a month. They did whatever they could to take advantage of this. Congress, not being bad folks, said, you know, this is too good a deal. And in 1986, they said, you can still put money into a traditional IRA. Now here, this is very important to remember. It is immaterial what your income level is. It doesn't make any difference. You can still put money into a traditional IRA as we speak today. Even the tax law in 86, when it changed, allowed you to do it. The difference would be if your income exceeded a certain level, we'll see that later, and you were covered under a pension plan at work, which I would imagine most everybody listening to the show is, namely SERS or FERS or Offset or Metro or Title IV. It really doesn't make any difference. If you work for Uncle, you're covered under a pension plan. So it precluded then some people to be able to do it that were fortunate enough to make that money. So people said, well, if you're not going to let me tax deduct it, I'm not going to put the money in it. Maybe that was a bad way to look at it. Maybe that was a good way to look at it for the person. But what I'm trying to say is the participation level just fell off a cliff.
But it would still be a good thing for someone who had no pension plan. It's better than doing nothing.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, for federal employees who had a civil service benefit at the time, probably not as big of an interest.
Right. And it even plays more of an issue now. If you put money into one of these things, you may be able to get it into a Roth IRA, which is somewhat the same thing as a traditional IRA with one huge difference. You don't pay taxes on the earnings if you meet some tests. So I would encourage people to do it. Now, the only test, whether you put the money into the traditional, we haven't done the Roth yet, is you have to have, quote, earned income. Now, what's earned income? It is what it sounds like. And I don't mean to sound like a wise guy, but earned income is a salary because you work for it. Earned income is an hourly wage because you work for it. Earned income is a small business profit, a teeny business profit. It is because you earned it.
Now, my understanding, it's the most highly taxed kind of income,
yeah,
as opposed to capital gains income or tax-deferred or tax-free income. So you want to reduce your earned income as much as possible from the little I know about tax planning.
Oh, you know a lot. You know more about tax planning than I know about benefits, so we make a great team.
This is why we're talking about IRAs. We're trying to reduce that high-taxed earned income.
Very good.
Good. Hey, I'm catching on.
All righty. Now, the fourth doesn't sound like the person earned it, but I bet they did. It's alimony income. So we have
somebody
to have one of
it.
These for you. Yeah, if somebody earned it, well, they earned it because of the years in the marriage. Mm-hmm. All righty. So now, if an individual does not have it and they happen to be married, everybody isn't married, but if they are married, if their spouse has earned income, then the ability to put money into an IRA would extend to the non-working spouse. So you have to have earned income or your spouse does. If you don't have a spouse, then you have to have it or you have to have alimony income.
So someone who's fully retired and their only income is their retirement benefit or their investment income, they could not make IRA contributions.
Boy, that's a popular question, yes, from the class.
It's
a great question, and the answer is no.
But the piggyback to that question would be, if you're going to retire, let's say, because I know a lot of people are planning to retire the end of this year, and they may be cashing out a big lump sum of annual leave in 2012. So would that be considered earned income for 2012?
Okay. Now, the reason that it is it shows on a W-2 in the first box. That's the IRS's test for earned income. But if you look at it and pierce beyond, you know, just it being on a form, if you had taken leave while working, it would still be on your W-2. So leave, whether paid in a lump or leave, whether paid during the year, it's still earned income.
Right.
As well as the final salary check, if they retired at the end of the year, that would be earned income as well.
Because as we all know, we're paid 2 weeks behind if we work for the federal government.
Yep. Yeah.
You get that last paycheck finally when you leave.
Yeah. Okay. So if we got traditional IRA squared away, the law was not changed, but there was a new IRA that was allowed starting in 1997. Now, let's dispense with all the what is it. It is no different than a traditional IRA. So if you understand how a traditional IRA works, then you understand how a Roth IRA works, with one huge exception.
So 1997 was the year the Roth IRA was introduced?
Exactly.
Wow. I didn't think it was around that long.
It's been around a while.
Time flies.
We had a very balanced budget at that time, and Congress was... this was very taxpayer-friendly, and I'm getting off on another subject. Let's stay with this. Okay, so we got Roth IRAs. And the deal with the Roth IRA, though, is you can put in the same amount. Now, the dollar amounts have changed pretty significantly. If you have not attained the age of 50, the most you can put into a traditional or a Roth is $5,000 for that year if you have not attained the age of 50. If you're 50 or over, you can put in $6,000, both, or your earned income, whichever is less. So, like Tammy, like you said, for somebody that is retired and maybe working the most part-time jobs, and they have, say, $2,500 from their part-time job, the most they can put in is?
$2,500.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Now, there's some rules.
And this is in addition to saving in the TSP if you want to do that, too.
Right. Right. Both of these.
The limit for the TSP is not the same as the limit for IRAs.
Right. So you can really put some money away in the TSP, depending, again, upon your age, 16.5 if you haven't hit 50, and 22,000 if you are 50 or over.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you could put money into a traditional or a Roth.
Right.
Plus. Nice. All right. So what are some of the rules of the Roth other than what we just said? Remember, it is the mirror image of the traditional with the huge exception. You don't pay taxes on the earnings if you meet some tests. So what are those tests? Well, the first test is once you put it in, it has to stay in there for at least 5 years or until you hit 59 and a half, whichever is later. So for somebody doing this at 60, at age 60 for the first time, their five-year test would end at 65. Somebody doing it at 35, their test would end at 59 and a half. So remember,
but if you continue to put money in on a periodic basis, so I'm putting some money in this year, put some money in next year, like let's say every year I put in $5,000 or $6,000, that test started when I made my first contribution, is that right?
Okay. Everyone listen to her question and listen to it closely. If I put money in each year directly into a Roth,
the same IRA,
then it's like you become a member of the club with your first entry fee.
So opening it's the key.
Opening it's the key. So
even
you can,
if you open it with $200 or whatever the minimum is, just get it open so you have that basis for when you started.
And you can keep putting it in. Mm-hmm. And what you're really going to like here, what's today? July? Come on, Tammy. Help me here. July 11. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Andrew is the engineer. And we're clueless with the date. We do know it's Monday. Anyway, so July 11th, and we've never had an IRA.
So the week after July 4th.
Yeah.
It took me a little while. Do the math.
All right. So we've never had one of these things before. And after the show, you run out and you say, I want a Roth IRA. So we run down to the local IRA shop and we open a Roth IRA. It is not that simple. We're going to go later. But let's just talk about what Tammy, because she really hit on a sensitive point. So July 11th. Now, most people would say, if I look 5 years downstream, it's going to be July 10th, 2016. It's not. The five-year test begins January 1st of the year that you could put it in, not that the year that you did put it in.
Because they consider, tax-wise, it's considered the year you made the contribution, not the exact date you
exactly.
made the contribution.
So
good.
A lot of people don't put money into IRAs, whatever type they are, until the filing deadline, usually April 15th. So if they waited till April 15th, they'd have 3 3/4 years mm-hmm. to meet
so
that first
so
test.
So if you do it by April 15th of 2012, and you want to count it towards 2011's tax return,
mm-hmm.
it still counts for January 1st of 2011.
Perfect.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you've got some time to figure this out.
Yeah.
Find that Roth IRA store, that traditional IRA store.
Yeah.
Which could be a bank. It could be a financial advisor can help you. It could be a do-it-yourself online.
Credit union. It could be brokerage account. It can be whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But know the rules, too. Right. What we are doing here now is pretty easy. Now, with regards to a Roth, though, this is, as Tammy indicated, we went into the front door of the Roth store. We went directly into it. Well, some people, because of the size of their income, can't do this. And we're going to see the size of the income later. There's kind of a chart, so it sticks on in our memory. They can still get money into an IRA, but they would have to, a Roth IRA, but they would have to transfer it from a traditional IRA. Now, here's where the five-year rule gets recalculated each time you do it. So it's very much different. So you need to be very careful with this one, that if you've never had one of these before, and after today's discussion, you'd say, boy, I can do this, and you transfer money from a traditional to a Roth. Same rules apply to the five-year test, but if you do it in the next year, then that one that you transferred in the next year has to meet a separate and distinct five-year test.
Sounds like some record-keeping.
It's record-keeping, and again, bullseye, because it's a headache. So if you're doing this, you might not want to mix them, because you're going to have the same ones in one IRA account under different five-year rule tests.
Now, will you get a form at the end of the year from whoever's holding your money in the IRA?
Just like a traditional IRA, you're going to get a form from the Roth IRA holder that says this is your value of your IRA at December 31st, whatever the year was that just ended. And you're also going to get another form to say this is how much you put in to it for the current year.
So you can keep those forms, and that's your record.
You should keep the forms, but you know why the forms are being sent to you, because somebody else is keeping them for you, just in case you forgot, and that is IRS.
But, I mean, that would be a way to do your record keeping, is just have those forms in a little envelope that's labeled My IRAs.
Got it. And actually, there's another form that you fill out. We're going to see that in a little bit. So record keeping here should not be seen as onerous, but it's your
important friend. It's
important. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's how the Roth works. Now, let's see how it works in reality. So let's turn to page 4. I'm pretending I'm at a seminar. Okay, so 4 is kind of down the bottom right-hand side. And this is an example of somebody that had yet to put money into a traditional IRA for the year 2011. So they go to the place that sells IRAs, and they go in the front door, and you can see here there's a box that stops them. And it says, do you have earned income? Now, we talked about what earned income is. So if your answer is, I don't have any, then you stop and go back out, because you're not getting in the building. Now, if you're married to somebody who does, you can say yes. And if you say yes, you can continue. It's kind of like Monopoly, I guess. So,
Pass go.
All right. So then you come up to where they sell IRAs, and the person greets you and says, you're here for an IRA? And you go, I am. And they say, what type of IRA would you like? Would you like a traditional or would you like a Roth?
That's the only two varieties.
That's it.
Okay.
So most of us would say, well, I'm kind of traditional. I'd like a traditional IRA. So they go, okay, go ahead, give me your money and take it. And you go, slow down. How much can I put in? And they go, well, we can't ask you your age, but if you have not attained the age of 50, you can put $5,000 in, or your earned income, whichever is less. If you're 50 or over, you can put in $6,000. And we'd say, thank you. Now I know how much I can put in, but what can I invest in? And the answer is not everything, but pretty close to everything. So stocks, bonds, mutual funds, government bonds, notes, bills, corporate bond bills or notes, gold shares.
This is where you might need some help.
And you should get the help.
Right.
Don't just go for, you know, the best interest rate.
Or what did well last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really. And listen to our shows and listen to what Tammy says, because she's a closet financial planner. And make the decision on what it's going to grow to. Remember, this is going to have to stay in there for a while. You want it to stay in there for a while.
I think that's the other point to make, is that if you're even going to consider doing something like this, and you're saying, well, I want to put money in an IRA because I'm going to buy a car next year. This is not the money you'd be putting in an IRA.
No.
This is money that you don't need tomorrow, next year. Maybe not even 5 years from now. This is money for your future.
As Tammy said, this might even be the last money you want to touch on Earth, because as long as it can stay in there, it can grow.
Now, this might even be money that you don't need while you're on Earth. It might be money that you hope you never need, but you want it available if you do need it, and if otherwise, pass it on to the next generation.
Generation or charity.
Charity.
These things are great for charity, because let them not pay tax on it. Yeah, so... And then,
so you mean we're talking to people who have extra money?
Well, there might be some.
Is anybody still listening?
Indulge us if you're going to turn off. So then you say, okay, this is what I want. And they say, take a step down the hall. You take a step down the hall. And they go, you know, you can't claim that as a tax deduction on your return. And you go, I'm aware of that, but I'm entitled to have the money sit in there and not be taxed until some far future date in life, and then maybe not. And they go, you know, there's nothing wrong with what you say, but you might want to reconsider your movement and go down towards the Roth IRA. And they go, well, how much is that? And they go, we can just dispense with the questions. Whatever you can do in the traditional, you can do in the Roth. So you'd say, why am I doing it? And they go, why don't you stop asking questions and go down there? I think you'll be happy. And you go, I don't want to take the risk, because when I get to the end of the line and I take money out of the Roth, I won't have to pay, I'll have to pay taxes on it. And they go, no, you don't. So in other words, these things are identical with one huge exception. And we talked about the tests that you'd have to meet, which aren't particularly hard, but you need to be aware of them, that would cause the Roth with an identical investment that was in the traditional to be non-taxable. And people say this is too good to be true. So let's go to the top of the page and say, well, for some people, it is too good to be true. So at the upper top of the page, you got three separate distinct squares. The left-hand square says filing status. There's only four ways to file a tax return. Married filing joint, or qualifying widow or widower, single, head of household, married filing separately. That's it. So find your filing status on the left-hand square, and then just work your way across to the right under traditional IRA deduction. Remember, this is the deduction limit. There is no limit on income. So, and you'd say, boy, these numbers look pretty high. Why is there a range? Well, nothing can be straightforward with the IRS. So, and I won't pick on the IRS, but Congress's interpretation of what you can and can't do. So if you were looking at these numbers, the number on the left-hand side, if your income is below that, you can put money into a traditional IRA and you can tax deduct it. So now we got
Can you even do that if you have a retirement plan at work?
Yeah.
So if your income's below that limit, you're doing the TSP at work, you can still do a deductible IRA.
Exactly.
In addition.
Right. And it's interesting, you have to. So it isn't your choice to do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you wouldn't be able to pay tax first in a traditional.
Right.
Okay.
And then it kind of has this range, and you say, well, why is there a range? Well, it's kind of like a fade out. So they didn't want to have you come to the edge of a cliff and fall off. So they go, as your income increases, your ability to deduct it decreases. So if your income is higher than the number on the right-hand side of that square, then you cannot deduct it. Now, here's what's key. You can still put the money in it. You can't deduct it. And I'm not so sure that this isn't a great idea.
This sounds like this would be a great thing for someone, especially maybe someone who's just coming out of college, landed their first job. They don't have a lot of expenses yet. They might be sharing an apartment with four of their buddies, and they have some extra income. This is the time to get in it, because now your money's going to grow not for 5 years, but maybe for 45 years.
But only the Roth. They wouldn't want to do this.
Right. So if you know somebody in that category, they may not be listening, but tell them to listen to the podcast of this. Because you get to the point where you bought a house, you started a family. Now you don't have the money to put into this when you're in your 30s and 40s, as you might have had when you were younger and had the disposable income.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of a catch-22, because you got an income limit saying you can't make above this amount. But if you make below that amount, you may not have the money left over to save. So we're reaching this group of people who we have to convince to save in addition to pay their bills.
Yeah. So let's come on over to the Roth, because that's the door Tammy was pointing towards. Okay, so now we're over in the third square at the top, and it says Roth IRA contribution. Now you notice we got the same situation. We're taking our filing status, and now we're just over under the Roth IRA contribution square. But you notice the dollar magnitude is huge. But if our income is below the left-hand number, then we can put money directly into a Roth and still have the TSP. If our income is fortunately above the right-hand number, which is a pretty sizable amount, you cannot put money into a Roth for that year.
Why don't you give us the numbers for just two of those filing categories? Because I think the most popular is single and married filing jointly.
Okay, let's take a look at single. The range is the low range. If your income does not exceed $107,000, and they call this adjusted gross income. There's actually a technical term called modified adjusted. Let's just call it adjusted gross income of $107,000. So if your income was below that, boom.
You can do
money
it.
Goes in. If you happen to be married filing joint, or if unfortunately a qualifying widow or widower, and your income was below $169,000, you can put the money right in the front door of the Roth. On the other hand, if we're single and our income exceeds $122,000, we can't do a Roth for that year, but we can do a traditional. That's key to a lot of our discussion.
Right.
If you're married filing joint or a qualifying widow or widower and it exceeds $179,000, no Roth for that year. Mm-hmm. Next year's whole different ballgame.
But you can still do a traditional, and there will be a way that you're going to describe later to get the money from the traditional to the Roth.
You got it.
Okay. Still okay. Listening. Still got a few listeners listening.
All right. Hopefully nobody's snoozing. All right. So if we're okay with then the rules, then here's how to get money into a Roth where you otherwise wouldn't think that you could. So let's turn to the next page, page 5. And there's a little graphic here that doesn't look totally different, but we still, at the bottom of the page, says IRA contribution. All right, so we know the basic rule is in order to have an IRA contribution, we have to have earned income. So we already know that. Our goal is to be able to go into the front door of the Roth IRA. We want to put it in directly. But we saw that that might be limited by what we just talked about. But we could still put money into a traditional. So again, our goal is to go into the front door. But maybe we can't. So can we go into the back door and still get to our destination? And the answer is yes. So we take our IRA contribution, can't do a Roth, but we can put money into a traditional because it has no income ceiling. It does have an age ceiling, but it has no income ceiling. And then
with a non-deductible.
Right. And we put it
which
in
which means we're going to be putting in money after we pay tax on it.
You got it.
Okay. But so, it's going to grow tax deferred in a traditional.
But we don't want it to stay there too long because
we want it to grow tax-free.
Right. We want to put it right into the Roth. So it's kind of, and you're looking at this and you're saying, now, wait a minute. Congress is going to allow me either to go in the front door or zig and then zag, and I can do the same thing. And the answer is yes. So if we put it into the traditional and moved it right to the Roth, the millisecond we put it in there, we can do it. There's no income ceiling anymore. There used to be one. I won't mention it because it's going to cloud. It's not there. But you notice in the chart here, there's a heavy two words that say, be aware. And when you do this, you're entitled to do it. But we mentioned earlier, it creates a new five-year holding period. But much more importantly, there's potentially some clouds out here. Now, one of the clouds that I know is 100% accurate, let's flip to the next page and take a look, and it's called the aggregation rule. All right, now what the aggregation rule is, it says, and remember the IRS has an ability to know what's on everybody's return. So let's assume that this individual has four IRAs. The IRS really doesn't care where they are, whether they're in this credit union or that mutual fund. They don't care. How much is in there at the
but
end the of the year?
But the TSP is not an IRA.
TSP is on the other side of the fence, if
so
you
these
will.
Could be IRAs I set up back in 96. These yep. could be IRAs I set up yesterday.
They don't care. They okay. aggregate them all together.
All right.
And here's the bad news here. This person has $50,000 collectively in all four of the IRAs. And the only thing IRS wants to know about or cares about is how much was put in there that we did not get a tax deduction for. Remember, we saw that we can still have a traditional, but we couldn't get a tax deduction. And by process of elimination, if they know how much was put in there that no tax deduction was granted, then all they got to do is subtract that number from the total and they know what's taxable. So in this kind of simple example, the individual, a couple years, put in $5,000 apiece and they put in $10,000 and they did not get a tax deduction. But the value of their total IRAs is $50,000. So that must mean that $40,000 of the $50,000 is taxable because we know the $10,000 is not. Okay, so we go merrily along, and I hope nobody turned...
Tell me again why we needed to know all of this.
Because here's what's going to happen.
Okay.
Now we go in and we put our $6,000 into the traditional IRA under the preceding example. And we're just as happy as we can be because we listened to the show and they said we can move that over to a Roth IRA, which we can. But it's unfortunately now jumped into the pool of aggregation. Let's call it aggravation. And now that $6,000 is 80% taxable.
Even though it went into our traditional already been taxed.
Yeah, because it jumped in the pool with the rest of them.
Because we have money in those IRAs that had never been taxed and
it
has to be considered.
Yeah.
I got you. Okay, now I understand.
Now, there's an expert on this, Ed Slott. I won't tell you this is my example, but mm-hmm. he uses a great example. Whether you drink coffee or not, I think everybody can recognize black coffee.
Mm-hmm.
How can they recognize it? Because it doesn't have any cream in it. All righty. Now, once the cream has been put into the black coffee, nobody can separate the cream from the coffee. Well, I'm sure some chemists can, but most of us can't. All right. You just can't do it. So this is the concept of the aggregation. It's been stirred together. So once the new 6,000 jumped into that coffee pot, it's been tainted with the cream.
And this is something that comes into play when you file your tax return?
You got it.
Okay.
And if you don't, you're going to get an unnecessary surprise.
Okay. So you have to be aware of this as you're doing it, but you actually take care of the business when you file your return.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you.
Okay. Now, let's go backwards. Go back a page to page 5.
Okay.
Everybody turn back to page 5. You know, there's a heavy dark line on the right-hand side of the page. Everybody see that? Now, what's at the right-hand top of that dark line? The Thrift Savings Plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Thrift Savings Plan has got nothing to do with IRAs.
And that would be true if you had a 401k plan as well.
Exactly.
Like, what if I had worked someplace before I came to the government and I left my 401k plan with that company? Would it still be a 401k?
Yeah.
Even though I don't work there.
Mm-hmm.
But what if I took that 401k plan and rolled it into an IRA?
It's not in a 401k anymore. So it doesn't get special treatment for what we want to do here.
Which is maybe why people roll their 401ks into the TSP.
Yeah.
Oh, now I'm understanding that logic.
And or IRAs. You can.
Yeah, but if I roll it into an IRA, then I fall under this aggregation rule.
But here's what we're doing. We're trying to get out of the aggregation rule. Now, notice at the top right-hand side, I got an arrow that comes out of the traditional IRA, and it points toward the TSP.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a form, TSP 60, that allows you to move your taxable IRA money into the TSP. Now, remember the TSP, once it's in there, it's not an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
So in the aggregation rule that we talked about before, our example with the $50,000 in there and $40,000 was taxable, if we move the $40,000 out of the IRA into the TSP, the only thing left in the IRA is
already taxed
10.
Money.
Mm-hmm. Boom. Over to the Roth IRA, no tax.
Okay.
And it actually opens up a logjam because now, next year, $5,000 or $6,000, next year, $5,000 or $6,000. And so this is a way to get what otherwise would lead you to believe that you can't do it.
Okay.
Now, you can do this. This could potentially argue with economics. So for some of you all listening that are very good money managers and you're making more in your IRA than your TSP, you might not want to do this. But there are not that many people that can do this. So let's move a little bit quicker because we got to get to the VC because I know we got some questions and folks listening.
Yeah, this is what people are listening for.
Okay, page 7 is just a copy of the TSP 60 to show you that we're not blowing
smoke.
That's
the form you can transfer money into the thrift.
Right, and then the next form is on page 8. It's called the IRS Form 8606, which you really will do yourself a favor. You only have to fill out the top 3 lines, and it says, I have put X dollars into my traditional IRA this year, and I didn't get a tax deduction. You have to fill this form out. Please fill this form out. If you have not filled it out in the past, take a look at page 10.
You can make up for it.
You can go back and correct it, and those go back to 1975 when the IRAs were first introduced, and it tells you how much you could have put into it. So the only question you would have is, did you deduct it or not?
Mm-hmm.
But to the promised land now, page 11. Tammy's article is on page 11 and 12. Certainly, you should read it here, but you'd be doing yourself a favor if you read it online because you can click and get the forms. Now, Tammy, this is your show.
Okay, so you want a definition of, we're going to be talking about something called voluntary contributions, which ties in with this discussion of IRAs and Roth IRAs because this is another way to get money into an IRA or into a Roth IRA. And so what we have to say up front, though, this is a very limited program, meaning that it's limited to current federal employees or federal employees who have just retired and have not had their retirement benefit finalized by OPM. You can still do this technically while you're in the process of getting your retirement, as they call it, adjudicated. But mainly we're talking to current federal employees who are covered under CSRS or CSRS offset, or otherwise known as the old retirement system as opposed to the newer FERS system. So unfortunately, FERS employees, this part of it doesn't apply to you. But you can do the thrift and you get the matching, so you have that instead. But for those CSRS and offset employees, the other condition is you can't owe any money to the retirement fund. So in other words, if you've taken a refund of retirement contributions because you had a break in service or if you've ever performed any temporary federal service where you didn't have retirement coverage, you would have to pay those, we call them deposits, back first before you can apply any additional funds to this voluntary contribution program. So let's assume your civil service or civil service offset and you don't owe any money to the retirement fund. Now you can set up what's called a voluntary contribution account. And in that packet of information that Bob was referring to, there's a form there called Standard Form 2804. It's a form that federal employees can use to establish a voluntary contribution account. This form is going to go through your agency to the Office of Personnel Management. And if you've already retired, or if you're in the process of retirement, I would say include this with your retirement application package so that when OPM is processing your retirement, they'll see that you're interested in sending money into voluntary contributions. Okay, once this form has been processed by OPM, you'll have an account. And you can send in money to that account. You can send in multiples. I think it's $50 minimum. I think it used to be $25. I think it's $50 now. But you can also send in as much as 10% of your salary. And I don't mean just 10% of your salary this year. But if you've never done this before and you've already been working for the government for 30 years, you can add up what you've made in 30 years and take 10% of that total as what you can contribute to the voluntary contributions. Now you might think, well, how in the world do I know what I've made in my entire career? Well, that's could be a little bit difficult without going back through your payroll history and adding up your entire salary. But if you have a record of your retirement contributions, which shows up on most leave and earning statements, and you have them from every federal appointment that you've had, you can just take those retirement contributions and divide them by 0.07, and that's going to tell you how much your total salary was, because you're paying 7% into the retirement fund. Divide your total contributions by 0.07, and that's going to give you the total value of your basic pay or your basic salary. And if you're law enforcement, you divide by 0.075, because you've been paying 7.5% into the retirement system. That's one way to figure out how much you can contribute. Now, the money that you're going to make as contributions to voluntary contributions program is money that you might have in a bank account. It might be money you inherited from Aunt Martha who died. It's money that's already been taxed. So it's the money that you would have maybe put into a savings account or maybe set aside into mutual funds. This is another place where you can save this money. And like I said, it's more than the $5,000 or $6,000 that Bob said you can save into an IRA, which is why you might want to do it here instead. This is for someone who has a significant amount of money laying around. It could be $50,000, it could be $150,000, depending on, you know, what money you have available and how much you're willing to invest in this. So this would be a way that you can write a check, put the money into your civil service retirement account in this special account called voluntary contributions. Now, the money's going to earn interest if you're still an employee. The current interest on the account's 2.75%, and the interest rate changes every year. Last year it was a little bit higher. This year it's come down because interest rates in general have fallen. And this kind of follows the Treasury rate of return. So while you're working, you'll earn interest. The interest you don't pay tax on until you take the money out. And this is also money, this interest income is money that you can also transfer to an IRA or to the TSP. When it comes time to take the withdrawal. Now, the longest you can leave this money in here would be up until the time OPM finalizes your retirement. The longest it's going to earn interest is up until the date of your separation. So if you're going to do this at the same time you're having your retirement processed, and as some of you may know, OPM is taking on average 5 or 6 months to process a retirement claim, then your money may not be earning any interest during that 5 or 6 months while you're waiting for your retirement to be processed. So if you're an employee who's going to retire in the next couple of years, this might be something you want to do while you're still working, get the money out while you're still receiving a paycheck so that you'll earn the interest up until the date that OPM pays the money back to you. Now, when you have this money in here, and your goal might be to get it from the voluntary contribution plan into this Roth IRA, because like Bob was explaining earlier, money that sits in a Roth IRA is going to grow not tax deferred, but tax free. And so this is the whole point of this, is that a lot of us want to get our money into a place where in the future, when we take the money out, we don't have to pay any income tax. It's not just tax deferred, putting into that earned income bucket, which is the highest tax rate, but it's now tax free where we take it out and spend it and it's done. So this would be a way to do that.
Absolutely. Picture the size of the money going to the Roth. Now, there are some caution flags out there, but Tammy, just laid it wide open, gave you the form. And did we talk about the forms that we can use to transfer the money from the MVC to the Roth?
Yeah, once you get it in with the 2804, that establishes your account. You also need to know what form you need to take it out. That's just as important as the form to get it in. And the form you need to take it out is not a standard form. It's a retirement and insurance form. It's an RI-38-124.
Which is included in our package here on page, 14?
That's right, on page 14 and 15. If for some reason you've lost the packet or you're trying to figure out where to go to do this, you can also find these forms at opm.gov. Right in the upper right-hand corner, it says forms, and you'll find the forms that you need there as well. But on the withdrawal form, it's called the Voluntary Contribution Election Form. And this is the form you use to take the money out. This is the RI-38-124. It gives you several choices. It gives you the choice to purchase an annuity, which we haven't talked about. It also gives you the choice of a lump sum refund, where you can either take the money out and put it back in your bank account, or take the money out and transfer it directly to an IRA, which could be a traditional.
Or a Roth.
Or a Roth. And if you're trying to work, if you're worried about the taxable portion, if you've been doing this for a while and your voluntary contribution account has earned interest, it even gives you the option to separate the taxable portion from the non-taxable and transfer that taxable portion to the thrift.
And remember, the thrift is not an IRA. This is really key here.
Mm-hmm. The thrift is an employer-sponsored savings plan, which is not the same definition as an individual retirement arrangement.
Right.
Different tax laws.
Yep.
As I'm learning with the rest of us, with the rest of you. So if we're talking about getting this money into a Roth IRA, then that's what you need to do. Now, we have had questions from people who put money into voluntary contributions in order to increase their civil service retirement. They use it to purchase the annuity. And that's another option. That's always been an option with voluntary contributions.
But this would be an additional annuity on top of what they already earn by years in service and highest compensation.
Right. It would be included with their civil service retirement benefit, but the annuity is calculated strictly based on the contributions you've made to this voluntary contribution account. And if you're going to do that, keep in mind the one disadvantage, the one thing to be aware of, is that once you've used that money to purchase the annuity, you no longer have the money. Now you're going to get it back as a monthly payment. But the advantage is you'll get the monthly payment for the rest of your life. So if you live long enough, you could stand to get back two or three times what you've put in. But on the other hand, if unfortunately you die early, you may not have even recovered what you initially put in, and your beneficiary will just get what's left of the balance that you had in the beginning.
Now, isn't there correct me if I'm wrong, something tells me you don't get COLAs. Nobody gets COLAs now, right. But if they ever come back, we wouldn't get a COLA on this VC annuity.
This is a level payment for life. So as inflation returns and you're getting the same amount of money every month, it's going to seem like less and less money every year because there's no COLA. And the other drawback, the other thing I caution people if they're going to go the annuity route, is you've now lost control of that money. If you had $150,000 in an IRA, you could take it out as you need it, to spend it, to use it to pay bills. If you have medical expenses, whatever it is, it's your money. But if you left it in the voluntary contribution account and let it turn into the annuity, now you're going to get a check every month. It might be $100, it might be $1,000, it might be $2,000 or $3,000. But it's that amount every month. You can't control the amount. You can't determine you want to stop the payments and cash out the balance. You don't have that option. So the annuity plus is it's a lifetime payment. The annuity downside is that it's a lifetime payment, which you may or may not want in that
Can we split it? Can we take?
No, it's all or nothing.
Okay.
You got to say either want the annuity with all of my VC or I want to take it out. Okay. And taking it out, you have options.
Yeah.
You can transfer part to the TSP, to the IRA, to the Roth IRA, or just cash it in and spend it if you want to do that.
All righty. Now, let's talk about moving, because you were talking about a powerful lot of money. I don't care who you are. 10% of your lifetime earnings is a lot, and I don't care who you are. Most of us don't have that kind of money sitting
around
in the checking account wondering what to do with it.
But We've got a few.
Yeah, we do. But by and large, people go, okay, well, I can do this, but I can't do that. Just do this. Now, one of the goals of today's discussion is to talk about how to move that money from the voluntary contribution to a Roth. Can you do this? Without question. And OPM will send you a form in the next year saying that you move the money over and it's not subject to income tax, assuming that you just move the principal over and you move the earnings into the TSP, like Tammy mentioned. Now, that's what they say on the forum, and I'm not saying the forum is wrong, but IRS has taken a position, and it's mentioned back on page T5. They have two of them, and it's called an IRS notice. One was 68, and that really dealt with OPM's responsibility to tell you the taxable amount. And the second one is that maybe they would look to aggregate the VC with the TSP. Now, picture that. That would hurt.
Yeah.
Because they're known as what's called employer plans. It is not clear. A notice is not like a revenue ruling. It's not like a law. I really feel I've been chasing this. How long, Tammy? Years?
Years. As long as we've been realizing this is such a great opportunity, we're trying to make sure that there's no little hitch to it that could ruin the whole concept.
And when this first came out in 2006, there was no hitch until 2009. And for at least the last 2 years, I've been driving myself crazy, and Tammy as well, saying, I don't know that you can do this. I really think in the next month or so, I'm going to know.
Yeah. And you can do it right now. It's just a matter that there could be something that comes back to haunt you. And that's what we're trying to avoid.
And there's even ways around that. It's called recharacterization, but that's going to go way above.
So we don't want to discourage someone from doing this.
Oh, no.
But we want to make you aware that there could be an issue that comes up when this is clarified.
Everybody that I've worked with, and trust me, I'm not fishing for clients here, but the clients that I have talked with, I explain the risk, the reward, and there isn't one that said, no, I don't want to do it. They understand there's an escape hatch. But at the worst, the money goes into a traditional IRA. The worst, which is not a bad deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you can move the VC.
You can't put it back in the VC, but you could leave it into a traditional. Just recharacterize the Roth as a traditional, and your problem is solved if there's a problem.
If there is a problem, exactly.
Got it.
Now, we did get some questions on this.
Yeah, and I think we may have answered them, but why don't we go through them and just to make sure, and maybe we can re-clarify some things that we didn't get to. So you want me to start with the first one?
Go.
Okay, here's the question from one of our listeners. I'm very interested in the voluntary contribution program. I'm a CSRS employee, and I plan to retire at age 56 at the end of 2014. My plan is to pay a small amount, $1,000, I guess, just to start the program. And this is because I owe money to the retirement fund for non-deduction service. So this person does have a deposit. I'm thinking that with CD rates very low, I may end up putting $200,000 in voluntary contributions after I make my deposit and just before I leave federal service. I will add $60,000 to the voluntary contribution right before I leave federal service. Okay, so I guess they plan to put in $260,000 total or something. She says 10% of my total federal earnings as of today is $216,000. I guess by 2014, she can put in the full amount. So this is someone who does have some money laying around. So I am a do-it-yourself type of person, so unless I really need professional help, I would like to move, roll over, transfer, whatever the right word is for this, the non-interest portion in my voluntary contribution program to the Roth IRA when I leave federal service and put the interest portion into my thrift. Is there a roadmap? Any advice is appreciated. Well, the one thing I would say up front about this is make sure, since you have some time, get this done before 2014. Because like I said, when the day comes that you actually retire, this huge amount of money you've put into voluntary contributions is going to stop earning interest. So I would say try to get this done at least a year before you retire to give yourself some time to get it money moved, get it over to the IRA, and you'll be done with it. But you may have a caution about any rule changes between now and then.
You don't know what the rule changes are, and I just want to make a comment. This person is very fortunate to have the money to do it. So for those of you all listening that would say, this is not me, divide this by whatever number you want, and if it makes sense at 10,000, it makes just as much sense at 200. I mean, it's an economic move. The caution I have are these two IRS notices, not so much the 2009-68, it's the 2009-75, and nobody's got a clear handle on this as to whether this would be aggregated with the thrift. So if this person had an equal amount in the thrift and an equal amount in the VC, and they move the VC directly into a Roth, there is no roadmap. It's just use the form. The form says, I want to put it into a Roth.
Right.
I mean, so there's nothing special. But if we get broadsided by that, an equal amount in each would make this thing 50% taxable if that notice is accurate. And I got to emphasize, if it's accurate.
That's another advantage, I'd say, of waiting. You know, get this account set up, put your money in the voluntary contribution, but maybe wait till next year to move it to the IRA since this person has some time.
Excellent point, because there's something else called a recharacterization. So if the person waited until January 2nd, 2012 to do this, they have until October 15th, 2013 to change their mind.
Okay.
And it's called a recharacter. It's kind of like the old Seinfeld show, a do-over. We have 2 minutes.
Okay, so. One more question.
Okay.
I'm very confused about how to treat my voluntary contributions account upon retirement. I understand that the limits for transferring funds to a Roth IRA have been lifted, which is what we've been talking about, but that the limits for establishing a Roth IRA remain in place. My adjusted gross income is over the IRS limit, which means I could not establish a Roth IRA. Does that mean that I must first roll over my voluntary contributions into a traditional and then transfer to a Roth? And if so, does the traditional IRA have to be pre-existing one, or can a separate traditional IRA be established solely for the purpose of transferring the funds to a Roth? I assume the transfer can be done the same day or shortly thereafter to avoid any accumulated taxable interest. So I think this person is concerned, like, how do you set up a Roth IRA if you're not eligible to make contributions to one?
You go set it up and say, the money's coming from this other source.
Right. So let's say we have no money. So you can set it up and not put anything in it. Just
not everybody will let you do that, but not because it's illegal.
So you don't have to set up the traditional and do it that way. You can go directly to the Roth, and someone above the income limit can set up the Roth.
Got it.
Okay. Can we have one more?
Well, let's do the 10% penalty. You want to do that thing?
Go ahead,
you
tell read
me. This one's a long one. But some people, if they have not attained the age of 59 and a half, would put money into a Roth and then want to take it out before the 5-year is up. They're going to pay a 10% penalty on the earnings, not on the distribution, but on the earnings. Once they hit 59 and a half, the game is over with penalties. I'm getting the high sign from Andrew. Wrap it up. Tammy, final comments?
Well, I think this is something people should look into if you're eligible. I think it's a great opportunity if you're looking for a way to set aside money for the future.
Okay. And check out our website, NITP Inc., INC, and we'll have something hopefully in the next 2 months as to the accuracy. Next week, tune us in. Ellen McCarthy is going to talk about the intelligence community because she was one and now runs an association of them. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.